To be the man, Daddy, you gotta beat the man. To be the man in the greatest sport in the world, you gotta beat the man. To be the man, you've got to beat the man.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Blood and Black Rum Podcast. I'm Ryan from ColdExploitation.com, and I'm joined with my co-host, Martin.
How's it going?
Pretty good. It's a new year. It's a new Blood and Black Rum Podcast, right? It's starting out fresh, going in a new direction. I don't think we've ever talked about wrestling before, have we?
No.
No. It's weird because, well, I mean, you probably mention it here and there because you're a big wrestling fan.
Yeah, I am. I am white trash.
Grew up with it. You know what? I was used to be a big wrestling, well, not a big wrestling fan, but I did used to get WCW magazine.
Ooh, WCW magazine.
Yes, I sure did. Yeah. I don't know what possessed me to ever be like, yeah, you know what? I think I just saw it in stores one time. Like, cause I used to go to a local grocery store, which at that time was Shop and Save. And I used to look at the magazines while my parents were shopping. And for whatever reason, WCW magazine stuck out to me. And I was like, oh, I should pick that up. So yeah. I was a reader of WCW back in the day.
Well, I'm proud of you because as everyone knows, we grew up in the 90s, when, you know, the wrestling boom of the Attitude era and WWF was kicking off and WCW and NWO and all that. I was one of the few WCW fans. I think the only one school that I knew. Everyone else watched the WWF. Mm-hmm. And I watched, I think, the WCW. I would flip back and forth in between Raw and Nitro. But I mainly, you know, like WCW. And that lasted until Goldberg lost at Starrcade by getting fucking cattle prodded. And that's when I was like, yeah, fuck this. Even at 8 years old, I was like, this is fucking stupid. I'm going to watch Monday Night Raw for now on. And there was no looking back.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I watched it for a long time, like up until like 03. Stopped, fell off of it, and then just randomly, like 10 years later, I was like, I wonder what's going on in wrestling. And I just started picking it up again. So I still follow it. I don't really watch it as much anymore because there's too much wrestling now. It's just like everything now that if you're a fan of, there's too much of a dearth of shit to watch. So I just keep up with what's going on. But
so, like, yeah, because like do they still have the wrestling channel? The WWE channel?
Network? It's on, that's on Peacock now.
So, I mean, like, if you think about it, it's like the proliferation of just so much stuff to, like, keep track of, keep up with. It's just...
Well, it's not even WWE now. There's AEW, All Elite Wrestling, that's been around for almost 5 years now. That's, like, your WCW alternative. They bought Ring of Honor not that long ago, so they also own Ring of Honor now. There's, you know, a bunch of indie promotions out there. TNA. Still is 20 years running, still going on. And each show has like a just ridiculous, like, you know, a bunch of fucking content. It's just it's too much to. It's at least for me to keep up.
I mean, it's partially like the internet too. It's just like makes it so that like you're constantly putting out content, whether it be through the channel, through Facebook, through TikTok, anything. Like, you've got content coming out. It's just hard to follow in general. And I think that, like you said, that's the same thing with most things. Star Wars, fucking way too much shit. Marvel stuff, too much shit. Star Trek, trying to keep up with even Star Trek. Like, you would think, like, Star Trek, nah, there can't be that much stuff. No, there is. There's fucking too much stuff for Star Trek, too.
Well, because CBS realized, Paramount realized they were sitting on that for way too long.
Yeah, it's, like, it's a gold mine.
Get 90-year-old, you know, Jean-Luc Picard out there. ASAP. We need this. Yeah. But no, wrestling's the same thing. Like, if you're just looking at, like, WWE now, you have Monday Night Raw. It's a three-hour show. That's too fucking long. Then you have NXT. I think NXT is 2 hours now. That used to be the developmental one of developmental shows, and that used to only be an hour on the network, but now it's on USA. I think that's 2 hours long. SmackDown is on Friday night on Fox. That's 2 hours long. They have a pay-per-view every month, which is anywhere from between 3 and 4 hours long. If it's a big pay-per-view like WrestleMania, WrestleMania is two nights now. So that's eight hours like for that too now. It's just like, again, that's just the WWE.
It's a full-time job to be.
Yeah, just keeping track
of it.
Just to watch it. Yeah. So
yeah. And that's how I've been feeling about a lot of things. Yeah. The whole idea of more is better is really not the right move anymore. It's you're getting hit with too much content. And especially for people who are OCD about it, keeping up with stuff like that, it's just, it actually goes overboard. And then you feel way too anxious about it. And you're like, well, you know what? I'm just going to give up on all of it. Can't be bothered. But we're not here to talk about the actual sport of wrestling and what's going on in that world right now. We're here to talk about a movie about wrestling that you may have heard of. It's got a familiar face in it. You might know him best from High School Musical. But I think I know him from the Netflix show that he was in, where he did like traveling around the world and like a little documentary. Sort of like, what was that show? In Idiot Abroad. Except instead of, you know,
Carl Pilkington
being himself and delightfully irreverent, you have Zac Efron traipsing around various areas. I think my wife watched that a couple times, and I like happened to catch it on. I was like, are you watching like Zac Efron like travel places? Like, for one thing, why? You know, like, I, you know, not that I have anything against the guy, but I was just like, it's a weird decision to just be like, yeah, let's watch a travel show with Zac Efron. I don't know. But yeah, movie star Zac Efron and Jeremy Allen White, who I'm very keen on watching him in The Bear. I don't know. Have you ever seen The Bear? You don't watch a whole lot of TV. And when you do, it's fucking wasted time spent watching stupid shit that I tell you not to do.
I think that's me talking to you, because I tell you about, you know, watching, you know, struggle busting through season 3 of The Witcher or something, you know. But no, I have not seen The Bear, but I've seen clips from it.
It's a great show. It's great.
Yeah.
You haven't seen the Christmas episode with Jamie Lee Curtis, you're missing out.
Mm-hmm.
It's great. Yeah, Jeremy Allen White, like him a lot. Harris Dickinson, it's got in here, and I'm not familiar with his work. A couple other people. And I think it was it's significant. It's an A24 movie. So I think in some ways you kind of know what you're getting into when you see A24 production strewn across the title card, because they have like a specific feeling to them, a specific formula, and it works. You know, as we've talked about a couple different A24 movies on here. We did Hereditary. We did Midsommar. But like they definitely have like this feel, and you know you're going to get a specific type of movie when you're watching them. Generally slower burn. So yeah. What are we talking about?
I don't know.
You can't remember. Yeah, we should preface this by saying that we did see this movie in theaters, but we saw it almost a week ago. So generally, we don't wait that long to do an episode. I don't really know exactly why. It just kind of fell in the time span of where we weren't going to be doing any recording. You were working. We just didn't get a chance to do it for about a week. So
I know, silly me. Taylor Swift the Eras Tour.
That's right. Yeah, if I have to hear any more about Taylor Swift the Eras Tour, and how fun it is to watch it.
Who's been saying that?
My sister, of course. Now we're talking about the Iron Claw, which came out, I think, at the tail end of 2023.
Yes,
and it's really getting in there under the wire. And we happen to see it in theaters just after that, 2024. We're the only people there as well.
It's always the best thing about going to a movie now.
Absolutely. Especially when we go at a weird time, like a Thursday matinee at 4 o'clock. It's like, you just know no one's going to, especially in our area, you just know. I mean, probably in bigger areas, people do go to movies at, you know, Thursday to four, stuff like that. But in our area, you just know when you're going to go there at that time.
It's totally becoming like my favorite thing now. Like, I just constantly, if I get bored, I will not hesitate to go to like a movie alone and just sit down and watch it by myself at theater.
You'll be the only one there. Yeah, it's fine.
Because you know what? It's great too. Because when we go up, you know, and buy a ticket, and the guy that owns it is like,
basically, yeah. We're the only ones keeping the lights on in the place.
But you know what? One point against them, they didn't have it formatted right to the fucking
screen
because part of it was cut off, which, you know, shame on you. It's not like running a projector is a fucking hard thing these days. It's not like there's an artwork to it. It's all digital.
It's true. Yeah. There was it was like cut off a little bit on top and bottom. So it's kind of interesting. It was almost like the screen was just not big enough to sustain the image. That's kind of what you get when you go to our small local theater. You know, it's not like we're going to a Regal or something like that where it's kind of all maintained.
And you're spending $70 on chicken nuggets.
Yeah. I mean, at least you could tell, like, it wasn't like egregious where it was like, holy shit, what's happening? You know, like, oh, his head's halfway off screen. You could tell, but it was just like certain things like writing, letters on it would be cut off a little bit. I think there was that one point where it shows like it gives you like your location stamp like in Texas. And it's just a little bit off, like where you're missing like something in the corner. So not terrible, but a perfect movie going experience? No. Besides the fact that no one else was there. So that's definitely one of the perfect things about going to our theater. I guess prefacing going into the Iron Claw, I didn't really know that much about it. I'm not like I said, I did read WCW magazine a couple times. I watched WCW a little bit back in the 90s and early 2000s. But
that would also be the most you thing ever. Look, I didn't even watch the wrestling. I just read the magazine every now and then.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I read about it. Yeah.
I read about David Arquette winning the world championship, you know, world heavyweight title.
Oh, no. That would have been a lot later than I was subscribed. I didn't really, never really followed wrestling all that much, though. And definitely didn't know anything about the Von Erichs, which this film is, you know, solely centered around. That's way too early for me. Like, I definitely had no context of that. Actually, I don't think I've ever even heard of them, to be honest with you, which is kind of surprising considering the legacy. But really, I didn't know that much about it besides the fact that it was going to center around this family and family of wrestlers. But I'm sure you knew a lot more going into the Iron Claw, and you've seen, you know, stories about the Von Erichs and things like that.
Yeah, I'm, you know, not just a modern day wrestling fan. I'm also, you know about the history of the territory days and stuff like that. And that's why too, like, I was asking you like halfway through, like, does any of the wrestling stuff make sense to you? Because like, it's using a lot of, you know, kind of smart terminology, like, you know, that I think that they're kind of expecting most people who are probably going to see this movie. It's like, well, you know, it's an A24 film. It's going to be a little bit more, you know, sophisticated. So we're expecting the people who are going to come and watch this film about the Von Erichs are probably mainly going to be people who know about the Von Erichs. It's not really somebody like, it's not like outside of Zac Efron, no one's going to be sitting down like like with their family and be like, hey, kids, want to go see Iron Claw? What's that about? Oh, fucking wrestling.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think like, I don't think it's that hard to get into from a, like a layman's perspective. There are probably things about it, though, that I guess arguably maybe it doesn't do a great job of leading into, you know, about the wrestling world, certain things like that. It kind of tries to give you a little background about it, but it doesn't do, you know, a lot of deep diving into like, this is the world. This is the, you know, this is what happens in wrestling land, things like that. And it definitely doesn't go into, I think, like the regional elements to it, the league elements to it. Like it doesn't really go into all of that scope. So it kind of just, you know, passingly mentions like, here's the WWF and stuff like that. So you don't really get a whole lot of that from the movie either. But I think, you know, people who going into it, even if you don't know about the Von Erichs, it's still an enjoyable movie to watch and get, you know, and to honestly as well, I can't really comment on how much they get right in this movie in terms of the actual historical, you know, verity of what it is. Like, I guess we could talk about that as we get into it, because you probably know a little bit better than I do. The significance of like, are they really true to the history? Did they capture everything that should have been captured about the family, stuff like that? That's kind of always the things that happen with the biopic too. It's like, what do you include? What do you not include? You know, you can't have a whole running history of the family or else.
Sure you can. Have you not seen Ray or Walk the Line? It's like, they're like 7 hours.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Which I do love. I do love Ray.
I think I've ever seen that one, actually.
You ever seen Ray starring Jamie Foxx as
no.
Ray Charles?
Oh, I think my parents did, but I never ended up watching it.
That's great.
Yeah.
And also, too, biopics have been, like, before we get into our beer, they have been, like, making a big comeback, like, especially, like, the music ones, too. Sure. Like, every year now, like, here's our Queen one, Bohemian Rhapsody. I know, let's do Elton John, you know, and they even did, like, a Weird Al one. You know, yep. as a joke.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, they're all, so.
Yeah, I mean, they are huge. And, you know, they're also, like, a good Oscar bait, too, to be honest with you. You know, you call out the fact that this is, you know, a biography and what? Get them on the ballot.
Well, this movie's destined for Oscar bait just because it's like, how many people die? get it up there. That's the whole reason Crash won.
It's true. All right, let's talk about the beer, or I guess we should say the not beer that we have on the show today. I'll let you take it away because you're kind of the pioneer of this one for this month. What are we doing? Why are we doing it? What have you?
Oh, were you asking a question? I was going to grab another.
Oh, yeah. I said, I'll let you take it. I let you take it away. Why are we doing? What are we doing? What beer are we doing? Or not beer are we doing? Why are we doing it? What's going on with it?
Well, it's because we're old and we're giving up. Giving up the drink. No. It's dry January, so we're going to humor ourselves. Well, at least I am. Did not drink for the month. I don't know how you've been doing.
Oh, I failed it like on the first day. I drank on January 1st. So did I.
That's why mine started a week ago.
Ah, okay.
So it's going to run into February.
So yours is going a little bit over. But yeah, I mean, I like the idea of dry January in certain elements to it. Like I had already announced previously, like a couple episodes ago, that I was cutting back a lot on beer, at least during my, you know, like during my normal weekdays. During the weekends, I will still drink. I will still have beer. I've been cutting back just like on the normal weekdays where I would normally come home I don't really come home. I work from home. So, but I would get off of work and I would just crack a beer and I would have one beer and basically a night. But I kind of wanted to cut that out a little bit, stop drinking or feeling the need to drink every single night. So I've been cutting back quite a bit, and I kind of counted that towards my dry January. So I didn't really set out doing a dry January specifically, but it just in general, I've been drinking less. But for you, you have decided that instead of drinking a beer, you know, which would again be like your normal, probably like daily occurrence, you're going to go the non-alcoholic route and drink the NA beers, which
every now and then, because they're too damn expensive.
It's true. It's true. We've never had an NA beer on here. We've talked about, I think, some of them before, but we've never really had the occasion to. And like you said, part of it is because of the price. Because the, I guess what you would call the quote unquote good NA beers, they have to be brewed like a beer, brew the whole thing, and then siphon out the alcohol. It's expensive to make that. So what you're left with as a consumer is you're buying an expensive, you know, basically beer priced non-alcoholic beer. And I guess for me, that's always been the off-putting thing is like, I'm already spending what, like $12 on a six pack that, and I could be spending that just getting an actual beer. And it's a little bit off-putting to have to stomach the cost of that. And eat it. And I totally understand it. I understand from the brewing perspective, it's still expensive to get all of the ingredients together, to go through the whole process and actually add an additional process of taking out the alcohol. But still, it's hard when you're in the store and you're like, oh, that's a, you know, it's an expensive proposition to be getting a non-alcoholic beer. So the one that we have on the show today, though, is from Athletic Brewing Company. So you've probably heard of Athletic. They've made a really big push commercially. And I think it's not just here, but everywhere. I think they've really pushed into like all the major supermarkets that, you know, have beer and major stores and things like that, which you don't really see a lot from non-alcoholic brewers. Like, you'll see now a lot more people are brewing non-alcoholic beverages, but they're harder to come by. It's not like you can just walk into your local grocery store and be like, yeah, you got that new Sierra Nevada non-alcoholic. Like, generally not. It's just not a, and part of that is cost as well. Like the shops are like, well, that's probably not going to sell that well. You know, I'm not going to get a whole case of it to have it sit there and go bad. So they're not as easy to come by, but Athletic has been doing a lot of them, and they basically are one of the leaders in making varietal styles of non-alcoholic beer, which is not something that you normally see, because normally you'll see like Heineken makes Heineken, but it has 0% alcohol, or Guinness makes a Guinness Zero. You know, they make their same style, but they make it without alcohol. Athletic does all different kinds of styles. And today we've got Wit's Peak, which from the name you could tell it's a Belgian style wit. So what do you think about the wit? How do you feel?
It's pretty good. It's definitely got like your coriander notes. It's definitely got your orange peel notes. Nice zestiness. Has even a little bit of like a Belgian style, I guess skunk, but it's not really skunk, but like, you know, kind of aftertaste, like back end taste mm-hmm. to it.
Like the warty.
Yeah, yeah.
The Belgian
yeah.
warty taste. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, obviously pared down because it's an NA. So it's, you know, pretty watery, but it's not bad at all. Actually, I'm pretty impressed with it, like them attempting this, and doing it as successfully. It is pretty good. Again, though, the biggest thing that I will harp on it is just the fact that for a six-pack of these things, it's just not worth it. You're better off just buying a fucking six-pack of Blue Moon. It's probably just as healthy for you, too, outside of the fucking the alcohol count, because this is 60 calories of beer, and it's got 12 grams of carbs in it, which is, you know, nothing but sugar.
Yeah, I mean, well, so I guess I'll start off with how I feel about it. So I think it's, you know, it's pretty good. And I think I've had two Athletics now. I think I've had their standard IPA, and then I've had this one, the Wits Peak. I think every time I've had it, I've thought it's pretty good. So it's not like, it's not blowing you away, but you're also kind of like, I think your expectations are already down a little bit. You're like, well, it's going to be non-alcoholic. So, it's obviously not going to be exactly the same as the alcoholic style. So I think they've done a pretty good approximation of a wit here. Like the immediate taste to it is definitely, you get that coriander element, the spice element to it. You get a touch of that, like malted barley. And then what ends up happening, and I feel like this is the same with the other non-alcoholic beer that I had. Once you really get that mouthfeel in, it definitely turns into more of like that wateriness, where it immediately loses some of its flavor. And by the time you're swallowing and you get that like aftertaste, you're really kind of getting, it's mostly just like liquid at that point. It doesn't really end up tasting a lot like the beer anymore. So it does have that watery element to it. It's very light. It definitely doesn't have the same impact mouthfeel wise as like a normal beer would, but it does a pretty good job. And then the one thing I would say about non-alcoholic beers to me is that they are such an approximation without hitting it on the head, that it kind of makes you feel like, well, I wish I was just having the actual beer. And so I feel like as a replacement for,
it's like lost limb syndrome. Like you're, like, it's like, yeah. Oh, I feel it there, but it's not quite there.
Yeah. And I feel like if I was truly like, if I was an alcoholic or something and I was trying to kick that urge to have a beer, I don't think a non-alcoholic beer would be a good thing, because I feel like it would actually make you more likely to go back to drinking a regular beer, because you'd taste it, you'd be like, this tastes sort of like it, but it doesn't really hit that spot. And so you'd be like, I just got to get the real thing. So it is interesting. I like the idea of non-alcoholic beers. I do think that some are better than others at meeting the need of a non-alcoholic beer. Like for me specifically, why I'm not drinking beer is because I'm trying to cut down on like those extra calories, those extra carbs. And in this case, particularly, 60 calories with that much amount of carbs is really not doing me that many favors, you know, because like if you're trying to cut back,
which is kind of a miracle too, if you think about it. It's like, wow, only 60 calories. It's like, how do you get that much sugar in there if it's only 60 calories?
Yeah. Like if you think about it too, like I think a normal 12 ounce, it's going to have about 120 to 150 calories. So it does cut down like half of the calories. But I know like for me, if I was to have a non-alcoholic, I probably would drink more of them at a sitting. And so it probably ends up being a wash as to, you know, what I actually ended up intaking. Because if I'm going to have more non-alcoholics, I'm eventually going to meet the same amount as if I just had one actual beer a night. So I don't know. I'm conflicted as to whether I think that this would actually work as in terms of like switching over to just non-alcoholic beer, but I think Athletic's done a pretty good job with their approximation of it.
I think, like, yeah, no, I agree. I think it will, for at least for me, I think when I've, you know, done like dry months, it like every like couple of weeks, it's good to like kind of slip though like a six pack in to like kind of sparse out, because it's like, oh, okay. Like if you're like gonna stop drinking and then you're gonna like just fill these in, it's not gonna do it. You have like, you have to like kind of fit it in, you know, every now and then. Otherwise it definitely loses its luster.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think like there's enough styles from Athletic. You could really, if the variety is the thing that you need, it definitely allows you to experience it without, you know, feeling like you're missing out. I think some of them too, not all of them, but some of them are actually gluten-free too. So if you're like, you know, craving the gluten-free beer, some of them will hit that mark too. So yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing. It's an interesting, it's definitely something that's been more of a proliferation. And if you saw in January, I think I saw at least two or three different breweries that were like marketing Dry January. Hey, you're doing Dry January? No problem. We got a non-alcoholic for you. it's kind of becoming a thing, just like hop water. Hop water is a big thing too. You know, replacing that IPA with some hop water,
your new seltzer. Your Poland Springs been sitting very oh so closely to a barrel of Citra and Simcoe hops.
One or two of the little heads might have fallen in there into your Poland Springs. Yeah. So, I mean, I would definitely like check out Athletic. They've got a lot of different styles. This wit is pretty good. You know, it could be your thing. And a lot of people, you know, used to laugh about non-alcoholic beers. Just be like, oh, duels. Why would I buy old duels? But as you get older, you can kind of see there is some appeal to it, to cutting out, especially if you're like, if you've gotten it to be a habit, it can help. So,
Especially now that we are alcoholics now, because the standard for that now is just looking at two beers a week,
like seeing them in store. Yeah, like
yeah.
If you make
eye contact, it's becoming like, it's like if you have lust in your heart, you might as well you have it.
It's imperative that you skip the beer aisle when you're in the grocery store.
You can't even shop at stores that sell it. You got to find clean, virginal stores. Well, we had Aldi, but not anymore. Yeah.
Absolutely. Branched out. And now, yeah, they're beckoning to me. They're like, hey, we got $5.99 tall boy four packs. You can't pass it up. If you're in Aldi, you're having to buy a pack of beer now. It's just that cheap.
Is it really $5.99 for a four pack
of 16 of that, like, you know, that Berger Kel knockoff? Yeah.
Oh, God. Now I'm going to really have
to. I know. Yeah. If you go in there, you stop by. You're like, $5 for that? All right. I mean, you're basically forcing my hand here.
Listen, it's kind of like when we at Stewart's with the Mountain Brew beer ice.
Right.
$3.99 a six pack. And it's like, but that was bad. So, like, you could, you know. Which I almost wish they'd bring that back to see how it is now. Like, you know, 15 years later. Like, you know, has Panther Pissed aged?
All right, let's talk about the Iron Claw.
The Iron Claw.
So, this movie centers around the Von Erichs, right? And they're a group of siblings, family of wrestlers. The movie starts out with a nice black and white look back period in the 70s, where it follows the patriarch of the Von Erich family, played by Holt McCallany, Fritz, his name is. And you didn't watch Mindhunter, right? The show by
no,
that was on Netflix, but I did. I watched Mindhunter and Holt McCallany. He's a big part of that. And it was comforting to see him in this movie, because I was like, I like that guy. You know, it's always fun to see somebody who doesn't do a whole lot of acting or haven't seen him in a lot of roles, see him come back here. But yeah, it shows Fritz. It's in the beginning of the movie. You see how motivated Fritz is to become a wrestler, to actually become someone, to win the title. And then it jumps forward and you see now he's got a ranch full of kids, basically. You know, all of his kids, Kevin, Carrie, David. What am I missing? Mike?
Yeah.
They are
Kevin, Carrie, Mike, and
David.
David, yeah.
They're all, to some degree, wrestlers, except Carrie at the beginning. We don't actually really see much of Carrie. They show a photograph, family photograph of him on the wall, but you don't really get to see him till later on in the film, and, you know, kind of explaining the reasons why.
Because Carrie was on the 1980 Summer Olympic team.
Yeah. Not destined for good things that year, unfortunately. So they're all wrestling to some degree. Kevin being like the main attraction, main star, main attraction right now. And what league are they in for wrestling?
Not league. It's
It's like a regional
territory.
Yeah,
wrestling then was territories. The World Class Championship Wrestling, WCCW, was his father's promotion.
Specifically in Texas.
Yeah, so basically, around this time period, wrestling across the country was divvied up by territories. Each promoter kind of had their own section of states that they controlled and ran shows at. And basically, for the most part, not all, but a lot of the promoters were part of the NWA, the National Wrestling Alliance. It's the big governing board that, and that's where they would make the decisions, like who would be world champ and, make their kind of decisions. And they've blown out talent from, territory to territory, like they do like a stint that they'd be like, hey, we want, Andre the Giant, for a couple of, a couple of months run out here in California. Can you send him over? Yeah. While you give us this talent to, do a couple of shows and so on and so forth. So.
Yeah. And so basically they're, all of the kids, mostly Kevin and, David are involved in this wrestling scene for Fritz. And he's, like you said, it's his
promotion.
Promotion. Yeah. So when we meet them, basically they're all very motivated. And I think like the beginning of the Iron Claw is a really great, time in the movie. From Sean Durkin, because, as a writer and director, he is really showing you at the beginning of this movie, like how close the brothers are, what kind of familial life they have, how the camaraderie between them is. And even after, like we start to see certain elements to it, like right at the beginning too, we do hear like how Fritz like names in the order of importance his sons, and how he, how he feels like, well, my favorite right now is Kevin, and it goes David and Carrie and then you, Mike, but you can work your way up. There's always a chance to come back up. So you start to see those, like that family dynamic of like what's going on. And you kind of at that moment in the beginning, you're like kind of jokey, like, oh, he's probably joking about that. Right. Like that's just a funny thing dads say sometimes. But you start to see that camaraderie between them. And I think that it does a really good job of showcasing that camaraderie of between brothers and also showing too the nightmare that the Von Erichs' mother probably went through day to day by trying to fucking feed this household of ranch hands / wrestlers. Like at the beginning too, when you see she's like she just literally keeps coming back to the breakfast table with like fucking like here's some egg McMuffins and here's some eggs, here's like a whole giant bowl of like 36 eggs,
ham steaks, corn fritters. Yeah.
It's fucking hilarious. It's like this woman's just trying to keep up here.
Boat of gravy. That's why all she does is spend her time making food and praying. Like and
they got like two different fridges in there.
And not actually mothering, because she doesn't do any, the film does not depict her, well. She's just like, that's between you and your brother. That's mm-hmm. between you and your father. Like, mm-hmm.
It would be pretty funny if they showed like a fucking like delivery truck keep pulling up, like a whole big, freighter of like just food. It's like, here's your delivery, man. It's normally going to the grocery store, but here you go.
Freights of eggs just being offloaded and like gallons of milk.
Yeah. I mean, just thinking about the upkeep is pretty crazy. But like I said, I like the camaraderie at the beginning. And then even when Carrie, Jeremy Allen White's character, comes home, after he's been, pretty devastated by not being able to compete in the 1980 Olympics, he's a discus thrower. And basically, you can sum that up as he hucks a heavy object very far. I've always liked the idea of discus. It's just like, who came up with that? It's like, just a fucking, Freaks. I know, it's just funny though. It's like, let's just throw this really fucking heavy rock as far as we can. And you would think in discus, there's gotta be a limit, like a literal, like physical limit to like where that can end up, right? Like, I guess most Olympic sports too have like a physical limit. It's like, can it go any further than you hucking it I don't even know what the record is from discus, but like, can you huck it that much further? I don't know.
Well, and also too, because I think it's pretty far out. I don't think a lot of people remember the reason why the Kerry Von Erich didn't go to the 80 Olympics was because the Jimmy Carter started a boycott and didn't want to send the U.S. over to participate because it was in Moscow.
Right. And the film does go into that. It has like a whole
the story. TV.
Yeah.
But I think that's like something that's like so far off now in the distance. I don't think people even really realize that now.
Like, yeah, I mean, I definitely wouldn't have thought of it at the time. If they had just showed like, oh, he can't participate in the Olympics, I probably wouldn't have thought anything of it. But yeah, the film does kind of go into that. And when he comes home, you know, he's obviously devastated, but like immediately you see all of his brothers kind of like jump on him and like, hey, it's great to see you. And like, again, that camaraderie that the film showcases is really nice, especially because at the beginning of the movie, I would say that Iron Claw is pretty slow moving in terms of, you know, like getting a lot of plot together. Most of what you're seeing is, you know, characterization, meeting the Von Erichs, seeing like their day to day, the things that they do, training and things like that. Montages. I think like also you get to see like Mike do his, you know, like do his own thing because he's one of the guys that really isn't really into wrestling. He's kind of a scrawny guy. He, you know, he loves music. He basically plays all these different instruments and
loves his Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers.
Absolutely. There's there's a nice scene where
say really love that he had a Hard Promises poster on his wall.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So you kind of get those elements at the beginning, but I would say, and I don't know if you agree, the opening and probably I would say the first act, maybe even into the second is a bit slow, and it does take some time to get itself moving and see where all of this is heading towards. What did you think about that? Because I mean, obviously, too, from your perspective, you already know where the movie is most likely heading. Like you know, it's you don't know exactly how it's going to divulge the details throughout and in a narrative perspective, but you know where it's going. You know what, you know, the tragedies are going about to unfold. So what did you think about that?
I was hoping when they were rafting down the lazy river and you hear Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, Don't Do Me Like That playing, and everyone's like, hi, Kevin, hi, Carrie, as they're drinking beers on their lazy river, that Jason was going to jump out and take, you know, that's how the Von Erichs died. They died at Camp Crystal Lake as they were, you know, lazily rafting down the river. It's all right. I think, no, you're definitely right. It is slow because I did think going in, because I did see a couple of trailers and stuff and them. Like a couple of like the promo vids, like I was at work and had YouTube playing in the background and constantly getting ads for it and hearing them talk about Chavo Guerrero Jr., you know, training them for the wrestling and the work that they put in for it, that there, I was thinking there'd be more wrestling in the film than there actually was. Cause there's not a lot, you know, and it takes like what, half an hour in this 2 hour movie to get to any like actual wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You know, so I mean, that was a little bit of a disappointment, but I mean, I was fine with like the, you know, the slow beats and slow burn. I mean,
yeah, I mean, I think it works for the film. I think it's one of those things though, where if you're expecting something different, like if you're expecting a lot more wrestling to have a focus beyond some more wrestling and showing like the competitions that they've been in. You might be disappointed in that it doesn't have as much at the beginning. And even then, you know, it does have a lot of kind of exposition to get through, and not saying that that's a bad thing, or developing the family itself is not a bad thing. It's just something that you kind of have to get through, to get to the meatier parts of the movie, the real, you know, events that take place in this family's life. And, I think it does a good job with that, you know, showcasing all these disparate elements of each of the family members' interests and how they kind of all diverge into wrestling. And at the head of that is Fritz, who's kind of, you know, I would say he's kind of, I don't know anything about the real life person, but certainly in this movie, Fritz as a father figure, as a person, is very demonized in terms of being one of the pivotal roles of the tragedies that occur, right? Like, I'm not gonna say they're placing all the blame, but it's certainly, the movie does put a lot of blame on Fritz as a person who has kind of driven his family into obsessing over wrestling as a sport and as a, like, a family namesake. Do you know more about the history of that? Is that, like, is the film kind of, is it trying to lay blame and have a scapegoat, or is that truly historically accurate to the family? Is it, you know, what have, do you know anything about that?
Well, I think the little that I do know, I think, Fritz was kind of a son of a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
Not like, you know, a son of a bitch by being like a complete asshole, but being very demanding and, you know, having unrealistic expectations, you know.
Sure. Sure.
For his kids.
You know, and the movie goes into that quite a bit. And, you know, it does also touch on some other things. Obviously, you know, Carrie had some drug issues.
They all did. Not every single Von Erich had drugs.
Sure. I don't think the film focuses on that as much. It more so on Carrie specifically, you know, because you get those variety of shots of him, you know, stiffen various drugs, prescription drugs, cocaine. Mm-hmm. All of that. They don't really go into the others as much. And I guess that's kind of one of those areas of Iron Claw and any movie that's sort of a biography where you can kind of draw, it kind of makes you think. It's like, well, this is someone's history, but it's someone's perspective of that history. So that's why, you know, I kind of question, you know, the film really does demonize Fritz as a, you know, as the main pivotal point in the issues that the family faced, besides like the idea of the Von Erich curse, but we're getting someone's perspective of that history. And so it's interesting to think about that. It, you know, it's not truly the truth. There is no real truth. It's just a perspective on the truth. So I guess, what do you think about the film's portrayal of like the lead up with the wrestling? Because it does have, like you said, there's not a lot of wrestling, but there is various matches. Do they do a good job recreating those matches, how it would have looked back in the 80s and what you've seen from the, you know, from video clips and things like that?
I do like that, the stylized, like, world class segment bits that they do, you know, with a couple of the things, you know, with some of the promos, you know, they have Harley races in here. And the guy that plays Harley, Kevin Anton, does a really good job. It was like portraying what Harley Race looked and sounded like back in like 1980. You know, just a gruff, big, burly son of a bitch. The Ric Flair promo, and we'll get to that a little later when we get more into that. Not great at all. Easily the worst part of the film. Mm-hmm. But the aesthetics and stuff, they do well. But like I said, though, like, for the most part, like, a lot of that's kind of just there and glossed over. Like, the whole, you know, like, one of their big breaks and big matches against the Fabulous Freebirds is like just a 45-second clip of like the Freebirds just running out, and then like, oh, they drop kick them together. Oh, and then, like, you know, and then it's like, hey, the Von Erichs are your new NWA six-man tag, like, champions, and it's like, okay, and that's it, you know. But yeah, like, I think the wrestling, for the most part in this film, you know, it's portrayed pretty well, but I think it's, you know, it's definitely an afterthought in the film. Like, it's a means to an end, you know. They're not trying to show the beauty and grace of the sport. They're, you know, just trying to show, oh yeah, they had some important matches along the way because they're wrestlers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, first and foremost, this is not a movie about wrestling. It's about wrestlers and the family dynamic of that. And I think, you know, in large part, that's where some of the interest comes from people who are not interested in wrestling. You know, it's got that sort of prestige element to it of, you know, it's about family, it's about family drama. I know that's why my wife wanted to see it. Wasn't because it was about wrestling or wrestlers, but more so because she likes dysfunctional families. And so, you know, it kind of has that that interest going for it. And I think it does that fairly well. And like we were talking about, you know, the opening moments showing that camaraderie between the brothers later on, once you start to see, you know, sort of those edges curl in on themselves where obviously like Kevin's non-successful bout or Kerry starting to take on, you know, some of more of the wrestling gigs or, you know, David taking on a lot of the wrestling gigs and actually going to Japan to compete. Those types of things kind of drive a wedge into the family, and you start to see like those wedges start to get at people. And most specifically, the film is its main focus is on Kevin, because Kevin is there. You know, the film shows, and I don't know how accurate this truly is to real life, but the film showcases Kevin as being the one that basically sees the start of all of his brother's tragedies. You know, first off, he sees David throwing up blood and he's like, man, you should get that looked at, you know? And so there's that idea that like, he's always there. He's seeing this happen and he can't prevent these tragedies from occurring. No matter how hard he tries or, you know, maybe the lack thereof, just not the knowledge to know. So the film kind of goes into that and you start to see that wedge driven in the family. And there's a great shot later on as, I think it's after David has died from an intestinal rupture, and
more than likely that was probably from painkiller overdose.
Oh yeah, yeah. And the film doesn't really go into that either.
They've claimed, the family's claimed for years that it was a ruptured intestines, but in Ric Flair's book, he said they were Bruiser Brody was flushing pills down the toilet so he wouldn't get caught with pills,
right? But I think it's just after that scene where you see them, now they're back at the, you know, the ranch house, and what once was them, you know, loud at the dinner table, you know, eating and talking, is now just like Kerry sitting silently, sullenly, you know, Kevin sitting silently to himself, Mike just sitting there, everybody's, you know, kind of quieted down, and there's like that whole, you know, element of, you know, sadness in the house now, which I think is really good. It's showcased very well. And the film does a good job of kind of dealing with that tragedy. And I guess now's a good time to bring up the fact that the film doesn't have Chris Von Erich in it. Because he also died of suicide and was another Von Erich brother. And the film kind of omits him from like even being a part of the family. It doesn't even make mention of him. It even mentions, you know, Kevin, who what's the young brother's name?
Mike. Oh, the one that died.
Yeah. The one that died as a kid.
He got electrocuted. I can't remember his name, but he got electrocuted and fell into a puddle of snow and drowned, which is like kind of like the most oddball way.
Right. Yeah.
as grim as it is to say, which, I mean, that's, you know, truly how the poor six-year-old died.
But yeah. But I mean, they even go, oh, Jack Jr. is his name. Yeah. They even go into that, but they don't mention Chris. And, you know, they've stated that it's because, you know, the film already has enough tragedies. But I thought it kind of interesting because like, what's more and more suicide in this movie with two suicides already in it? You know, maybe it's just that there's also not enough time to kind of go into another Von Erich. What do you think about that?
Yeah, it's fine. Like, I do kind of agree. I think, you know, probably would have been a little too much. I mean, the film's already 2 hours long, and there's already so much, you know, tragedy, and basically does, you know, fit the same beats of, you know, his brother Mike. So I, for brevity's sake, for a film, yeah, I mean, it's fine. Especially seeing as they kind of admitted, I mean, not admitted, but kind of combined Mike and Chris's stories into one. So, and the fact that, you know, people who know the story of the Von Erichs, you know, are going to point that out to people. So, I mean, it's not like anything that's going to get lost to time.
Mm-hmm. So we touched on this a little bit. So, you know, Ric Flair is obviously in this movie. How do you feel about that impression?
Fucking terrible. It's one of the worst things of all time.
It's
jarringly bad.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting that there wasn't anybody that could do a Ric Flair impression better. I don't really know the actor who plays Ric Flair, Aaron Dean Eisenberg, but like you just have to kind of think, you know, especially when you compare the two, like the impression is really not even close. And I don't know. It's like you said, it's jarring. It's, you know, when you think about it and how close, like all of them really appear to the actual Von Erichs.
Except Jeremy Allen White's like a foot shorter than what Carrie Von Erich is.
Sure. Yeah. it's just weird how Ric Flair's portrayal.
Well, also, because it's Ric fucking Flair, for God's sakes. It's like he's right up there with, you know, The Rock, Hogan, you know, Steve Austin.
I would say, like, even people who don't know that much about wrestling, they may know Ric Flair. So that's one of those impressions that you kind of want to get right in this movie. And it really falls far from hitting that, especially when you watch, like, the, because they try to recreate some of the interviews that they've done.
Promos,
yeah. Yeah. And when you watch the real one, it's not even close. Which makes you think too, like, why sometimes did they even bother to recreate?
That's where the money ran out.
yeah.
they were doing everything else fine, and they're like, oh fuck, we don't have money to get good Flair. They probably could have paid Flair a fucking dollar, and he would have showed up and just, like, you know, done it himself at, like, you know, the ripe age of like 74. Woo!
Yeah.
They don't even get the woo right.
No.
He's like more like, wow. Like Owen Wilson. Why is Owen Wilson doing it?
Yeah.
Or you know what? Will Ferrell, you know, from Eastbound and Down. Like, oh, look at my plums. I got my juicy plums. Feel those plums.
So, how do you feel about the Kevin romance that the film goes into, you know, because obviously a big part of it is his family life.
Isn't it lovely? He loves his brother so much he doesn't know how to talk to ladies.
Yeah.
And he loves his brother so much with that mountain of a man, she makes him a man.
That's right.
It's fine. You know what I was giving out about a little bit to myself though, when they're having their barbecue date, you know. Delightful.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, oh, isn't it fake or whatever? And he's like explaining to her, like, no, it's not fake, it's real, but, you know, well, we do, you know, this and this happens and stuff. And it's like, that would never happen. Like, especially like if she wasn't married or like to him or something, like he wouldn't, like, because back then wrestlers were incredibly productive of the business. It's you know, that's why I can't remember his goddamn name, but like they were, you know, very protective of the business. They don't, like, you know, they wouldn't expose secrets. Like, you know, at the end of the movie, when you see Ric Flair, like, come into like the locker room and talk to Kevin Von Erich and, you know, like, oh, that was a great match. You know, we should do it again. Back then, like the heels and the faces had their own locker rooms. They wouldn't be seen like talking together. Cause you know, to keep the illusion that everything they're doing is real. So he wouldn't be like on his first date with some girl being like, oh, yeah, if, you know, if I do it right, the NWA bookers might think I'm good enough to, like, you know, give me a world title match if, you know, I win enough around here and stuff. And, you know, he wouldn't be like talking about the business at all like that. He'd be like, oh, you don't need to know about that. So,
yeah, keep those secrets close to the vest.
Yeah.
Instead of divulging them to the first woman that you're meeting.
Yeah.
Before they even realize if they're going to have a relationship or not.
She got nice boobies.
She goes back and tells everybody about it. And there it goes.
This is how he does the Iron Claw. It's a bunch of bullshit. Yeah. I also like when they show the sportatorium and everyone's partying and lining up and stuff down in Dallas. Because, I mean, that's one thing I'll kind of say that the film, because it doesn't like have like these big matches and kind of the energy to go with it, like to show the wrestling, it does take away from like the Von Erichs were a big fucking deal in the 80s, especially down in Texas and down in like South in WCCW and like, you know, regional promotions like Georgia Championship Wrestling and Mid-South and etc. Like they were a big fucking deal. Like if you watch like the videos of the matches that they were doing back then, sold out, people screaming, throwing shit into the rings, like, you know, fainting over each other. They were big shit. And I think the fact that because the film, excuse me, I'm in a little indigestion there, because the film does have these like small, intimate, you know, very like feels like it was the wrestling matches were shot kind of in like high school, because you go like the lighting kind of just shows a bit of the, like, you know, because obviously they weren't going to get like a billion, you know, people to fill in as extras in like these, you know, places. So it's like more, you know, intimate looking, you know, even in like intimate settings, the places would have been rocking, like, you know, and been like, wow, this is a big goddamn, you know, big thing that's going on, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that the film showcasing the idea of like, I don't know, I guess I like the idea of them showing all of like the family dynamic. I do think that it does need a little bit more of a call to attention of like the fame that they already had, because it almost kind of makes it seem like you're like a local hero, right? Like you know, you've been battling it out in like your local YMCA wrestling match kind of, and like you said, a lot bigger than that. It doesn't really go into that well. So but speaking back about the, you know, Kevin's family with Pam, you know, there's the obvious idea that Kevin is trying to be a different person than his dad for his kids. And ultimately, kind of accidentally, does a similar thing by being kind of absent for a lot of his son's early life, because he's afraid that he's going to pass on his curse, the Von Erich curse, to his family, especially after multiple tragedies have occurred. But I think that the film does a really good job of kind of showing the disparity between the two families. You know, you have a family who is obviously very close knit, but that's because Fritz's relationship with them almost enforces it to be close knit, because you have to have, you know, it's almost a competition in the Von Erich family to be the better brother, even though, you know, everybody's very good to each other and, you know, jealousy is not that, you know, jealousy isn't really not as apparent in the dynamic. There's still that element of, you know, trying to become dad's favorite. And, you know, on the flip side, you have Kevin's family, who later on at the end of the movie, you kind of see him try to be that different kind of dad who's crying in front of his kids. And even though he, you know, kind of talks about how it's not manly to cry.
And that quote he says too is an actual Kevin Von Erich quote. He said, you know, he has said before, you know, I used to be a brother, you know, an older brother. Now I'm not even a brother anymore.
I mean, it's a great end to the movie. I think it's really, like, it's like whether that's the exact quote or not, it really is an effective end to the movie, because you have the whole dynamic of, and honestly too, think about this. They must have fucking men in the genetics, because they got fucking, what, five or six brothers? And then the Von Erichs go on to have, like, I don't even know how many. At least two more sons. They got men in the genetics. But anyway.
Well, I was going to say, in the film, when they show, his sons, he did have a daughter, too.
We forget about her. Like, it's not...
women folk.
Yeah. But it's a really effective way to end the movie. I think, if you're going to end the movie at any point in time, right there is probably the way to go. I like it a lot. I like the ending. I think that it does a good job of trying to say, like, here's what we're going to do different, because obviously something in that family was not working, whether it be fame, whether it be dad, something really went haywire to have, three people in the family commit suicide.
Well, again, mom wasn't great either, because at least in this film, the way she's, portrayed is because, she's just like, just leave me alone.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of the way that she's portrayed too is showing how wrestling kind of seeped into their life and like sort of took over, like expanded to be literally everything. Because we do get that scene where, it shows her where they're looking at the painting. Mike's looking at the painting that she did. And she's like, yeah, I did that. But you didn't even know that, right? Because it's almost saying, like, these were my interests these were my interests prior to wrestling. And it all became, the secondary thing that I never got to do. And then at the end of the movie, we see her start painting again because
she's got nothing left.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's her taking back the things that she wanted to do rather than being forced into doing something specific,
So real quick, to kind of go through the morgue, we talked about, Jack Jr. not shown in the film, but
he's shown in heaven.
Yeah,
Dream sequence, right?
Yeah, gets electrocuted and then falls into a puddle and drowns. David died in Japan of intestinal rupture, which is probably due to drugs, because again, what 24-year-old is having their intestine just rupture in Japan? Michael commits suicide after with pills, and Carrie shoots himself in the head. Also, too, one thing that the film kind of makes seems like happened, which didn't happen. Carrie does lose his leg in a motorcycle accident, but it is not right after his foot. In a motorcycle accident, and the film makes it look like after he won the title off of Flair, that's when it happened. It's not happened like 3 years later. So, and also too, the film doesn't show the families of all these Von Erichs. I think every one of them was married to at the time. They make them all seem like they were alone, because at the end, Carrie especially, when Kevin's like, "Oh, you should be with so and so," like, if you feel alone, and he's like, "Who?" He was married, and he's coming around with, just some random goth chick,
Right? Yeah.
So that's one thing that the film omits, which again I get, because again, it's a film, not a TV series. That's why I do think it would have worked a little bit better as like a mini series, because you'd have enough time and depth to kind of go in more into like the backstories, things that happened and led up to it, et cetera. But, it's pretty good for what we got.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think they did a good job with it, despite, obviously taking liberties. So.
Which every biopic does.
Yeah, of course. there's no way that you can't cover everything. So you have to take liberties, and obviously it's a little bit more dynamic, a little bit more entertaining, I guess, to see that, Carrie loses his foot right after the championship. Obviously, like, serendipitously, that would be like horrible. And in reality it didn't happen, but I think they just take some of those liberties to get that shocking scene of him walking into the kitchen, and you're like, oh, he's, you know, look at him, he's fine. He just got a little scrape on his back, and then all of a sudden he kind of turns around and you see, oh, missing a foot. It's a nice little shot, but I guess for people who know this history, it's not really that, it wouldn't be that surprising, right? But for people who don't, it's a nice little shot. So let's give the Iron Claw a rating. So on a scale of 0 to 10 family barbers who don't know how the fuck to cut hair.
Oh, dude, Zac Efron is the worst. His fucking hair is so bad.
I mean, at that point, like, you must have gone to barber school to get it consistently bad across the board for all brothers, right? Like that takes some work.
You know what's great? It's great, too. If you look at, like, all the Von Erichs, like, how they actually looked and stuff, their hair is essentially, like, fucking... They look like Mark Hamill in the original Star Wars, mm-hmm. just running around like, yeah. Oh, but I wanted to go to Taji Station to get power.
I mean, even like in the little dream sequence there where we see Jack Jr., even in heaven, they couldn't get the haircuts right. So 0 out of 10, what would you give the Iron Claw?
I give it, wait, I don't want.
I told you, barbers.
Barbers
who, family barbers who struggle with haircuts.
I'll give it an 8 out of 10. It's a really good movie. I liked it a lot. I think, surprisingly, Zac Efron is really good as Kevin Von Erich. I haven't really seen Zac Efron's work, to be honest with you. I know the name, obviously, because it's one of your sister's high school heartthrobs. But he did a really good job, you know, and everyone in this role in this movie does a really good job. Jeremy Allen White as Carrie Von Erich, outside of being like a foot shorter than Carrie, he does look and does a great job as the old Texas Tornado himself. Holt McCallany as Fritz, great. Just a surly, stubborn bastard, you know. They're all, you know, it's all outside the guy that played Flair. Everyone, you know, was really good in this, put in good roles and, you know, made the story work and be really cohesive. It's a slow burn of a film. There's no real climax in the film. It's all kind of just rising action and then just, you know, just very slow, like build, and then just kind of ends. But, I mean, it's kind of fine because, again, it's telling the story of the Von Erich. So it's not like the things that I think narratively that are supposed to hit that beat don't really hit that beat because it's, you know, a very, you know, kind of a small film. But it all works. The one thing that I, you know, didn't really enjoy too much about the film was just, again, I think it would have been nicer to see a little bit more wrestling aspect to it, you know. To kind of make you feel more invested into what was going on at the time. Again, I get it for like time's sake, you know, you can't really do that because the film's already over 2 hours long, but it would have been a nice thing to add. Cause again, it kind of makes what they're doing seem really truncated because they had like a quick, like 2 second match. And then you got Fritz telling, you know, Zach, you know, well, if you have your next match, you might be fighting for the NWA World Championship. And then that World Championship match is like, you know, not like a big part of the film. You know, kind of flies in the face of the importance of that event. You know?
Yeah.
But outside of that, yeah, 8 out of 10. I liked it a lot. I thought it was real good.
Yeah, I would agree. I would give it an 8 out of 10 as well. I think it's a really good movie. You know, even if you're not really a fan of wrestling, it's a good movie about family dynamics, about, the obsession of, furthering, you know, what you can do, obsession with getting fit, doing, you know, wrestling, as a, you know, as a career, especially in the '80s, how much was actually involved in that. And, you know, a good depiction of the Von Erich family, and whether it's, you know, wholly realistic to what actually happened, I can't really say, but in terms of watching it as a movie, you know, for what it depicts in the perspective that it depicts, I think it does a really good job of showcasing, you know, the, how the family life, affected all of these people. And, you know, it does a really good job showing the lead up to those tragedies. So it may be a slow burn and it may take a while to get there, but, you know, at, probably after, I want to say maybe that the half of the movie, it really is kind of like you said, there's really no like climax to it. It's almost like you get rising action and then just like a really downtrodden story for the next, you know, hour or so that it lasts of kind of like depressing event after event. So there's really no like, there's no high point where you're reaching and then, you know, you get the resolution. It's almost like a descent, really, you know, of happiness and then into a descent into sad elements until eventually at the end of the movie, you have that epiphany of like, well, maybe this is just not the things that we're doing. It's just not working. And we need to get kind of get out of that. So I really liked it. I think that the ending of the movie is, you know, emotional and effective, and it does a really great job of that. And if it truly was said too, like even better as an actual quote, I think it works really well. So the movie is really interesting. Give it a watch, especially if you're fans of wrestling. But even if not, I think there's a lot to like here regardless. So very, very good movie. Great, great outing for us seeing it together and alone in theaters. All right. So what do we got next on the docket? I know that Mean Girls releases this Friday. Mean Girls, a musical. I'm seeing early reviews that I've seen basically said, why? Because it doesn't offer anything new, retreads the same jokes, and yet there's music in it too, which sounds like a nightmare to me, honestly.
I mean, I do like musicals, but I mean,
I'm not a fan of musicals, so I don't
know. Still, I mean, I'm not running. I'm in no rush to do that right now. We didn't rock. You didn't. You know, we had to wait of nearly 10 years on the program to finally do Mean Girls. So we're not just hopping right into the musical, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Was that even coming to theaters, or that could be like Paramount only?
It's in theaters.
Oh.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't think we've quite yet picked our slate of movies that we're looking to cover in the future, but I know we'll come up with something interesting. Maybe it's time to go back to like a spaghetti western or something. I don't know. Something like that. We still got to do, I think we wanted to do a John Saxon month as well, right?
Probably do. We want to do that for February for like Man Crush, February Man Crush for Saxon.
Sure. So, yeah. Stuff coming up. You'll definitely want to check it out. More of Blood and Black Rum podcast in 2024, of course. I don't want to say that there's new stuff coming, like nothing that's going to reinvent the wheel, but you're going to get more of the same, which is always great. Always welcome from Blood and Black Rum podcast. So we appreciate you listening. And if you do want to listen to us more or listen to our old episodes, which I do think I'm going to try to go back through and kind of like edit them to make the recordings even sound a little bit more crisp and neat. You should check us out on any podcast app, really. We're on everything. Our home base at Spotify or Apple Podcasts, whatever you use. I'm sure we're there. Subscribe to us. Leave us a nice review. We're on Facebook and Twitter. Search for us, Blood and Black Rum Podcast. We have an email address at bloodandblackrumpodcast@gmail.com. Or you can write to us. Let us know what you like and what do you want us to cover for films, and we'll take that into consideration. You can also donate to us at our Patreon page or on our Spotify page. Anything you donate will be put towards beer, or in this case for this month, non-alcoholic beer, because it's fucking expensive, regardless of it being non-alcoholic. So we appreciate that too.
We're just going to do a bottle of water.
Yeah. The non-alcoholic of choice. A bottle of water. Delicious. Quenching.
What do you have? I have Poland Spring. What do you have? great value.
Yeah. So, or even better yet, because we're not using, we wouldn't be using any plastic bottles. Just my Brita. Just gonna grab my Brita from the fridge.
Well, aren't you fucking?
Got a never-ending supply of it in there. Yeah. So, thanks for listening, everybody. Hope you enjoyed our episode on the Iron Claw. We hope you come back soon to hear our next episodes, which we aren't real. You know, we don't have a definite knowledge of what we're gonna do yet, but. You'll want to find out when we come back in 2 weeks. So thanks for listening. Until next time.
Take care.